Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team, the FAST Team. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Dave Schellbetter, manager of Sun & Fun Radio in Lakeland, Florida, who is today's host.
This is Dave with Sun & Fun Radio. Back in April, shortly after the 2011 Sun & Fun fly-in, Sun & Fun issued a press release saying that Sun & Fun's president, John Burton, was taking on a new leadership role as the Florida Air Museum president. The move that shocked a lot was that as of June 1, he was stepping down from his duties as president of the Sun & Fun fly-in. A nationwide search for a new president for the Sun & Fun fly-in began immediately. 180 people applied for the job. A short 3 months later, they announced that John Leitz Lienhouts was given the position as president of the Sun & Fun fly-in. Even though he wasn't officially acting as president, he started his job making appearances at the 2011 AirVenture fly-in. Shortly after AirVenture, he started in the office at Sun & Fun. I want to welcome John Leitz Lienhouts to the virtual deck. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fantastic, and my feet have not touched the earth for about 2 weeks, so life is really good.
Walking in the clouds, being at the helm of Sun & Fun, huh?
Absolutely. Being here with the Sun & Fun staff at Lakeland Linder Airport is a dream come true for a kid out of Kansas, so to speak, that never thought of something like this could ever be possible, but here I am today.
Well, now, John, you are an aviator. You started when you were a teenager, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I was 19 years old as a college kid at Oklahoma State University, and trying to find my path forward, and aviation seemed like the best answer to all my issues in life, and it turned out to be just exactly that. But I went and got my private pilot license at the Oklahoma State University, became a flying Aggie, and went on to get my commercial and flight instructor rating while I was there, and actually taught for a little bit. But I was 19 with my private pilot license in October before my birthday in 1970.
And how long after you became a licensed pilot did you consider and join the Navy?
It was about a year later. A guy flew into our airport there in Stillwater, Oklahoma, in a T-34B, and jumped out of that airplane in a green flight suit and put his arm around me and said, "Son, it looks like you need to be a great naval aviator." So he convinced me that naval aviation was a path forward. I, at the time, was not exactly too clear what naval aviation was all about, thinking that it was just another arm of the United States Air Force. And it was not until I ended up at the back end of a boat looking at a ship pitching and bobbing in the ocean that I realized that there was such a thing as real naval aviation, so to speak. And I earned my sea legs at that moment, and I've never looked back, as that became the centerpiece of my adult life as I grew to be a carrier pilot and got the opportunity to fly off ships all around the world.
And that career spanned 27 years. Now, I understand you were instrumental in the very beginning sortie of Desert Storm.
Yes, sir. I was fortunate to be on stationed aboard the USS John F. Kennedy as the executive officer for Light Attack Squadron 72, the Blue Hawks. In that role, I had a requirement to lead plan and lead strikes for Carrier Air Wing 3 out of the Red Sea in the Red Sea Battle Force. In doing such, I was given the opportunity to lead the first night strikes for our sector of concern, which was the western part of Iraq, taking out the radar sites in the highly active MiG bases just to the west of Baghdad. So I led a force of about 40 airplanes, EA-6Bs, Tomcats, A-7s, A-6s, as we delivered high-speed anti-radiation missiles against radar sites there on the west side as part of the rollback plan to take down their air defenses.
You mentioned several aircraft. What were you flying in those sorties?
I was flying the A-7 Corsair II. Single-seat, light-attack, single-engine aircraft that had been around since right at the Vietnam. I think the airplane actually started its active combat life in Vietnam in 1968, and we retired it at the end of Desert Storm. We were the last active-duty squadrons of the Navy flying the aircraft. We had actually been planned to transition to F-18s in the late summer of 1990, unfortunately, the Saddam decided to take Kuwait, and that changed all of our lives. And we quickly went from a transition squadron to a deployable squadron again. And in the period of about 72 hours, we went from relaxing and trading in our aircraft A-7s for F-18s to loading aboard the John F. Kennedy and getting underway. So from Friday afternoon at noon until Monday morning, we were scrambling to get our act together and launched eastbound across the Atlantic, relocated to the Red Sea, and do the strikes on the 17th of January, 1991. Pretty exciting stuff.
I guess. Now, that wasn't the only aircraft you flew in your career. I understand you flew pretty much everything with wings.
Yes, sir. In the Navy, when you become a landing signal officer as a collateral job, you're given the opportunity to cross-train in another aircraft type. And I chose the F-14 in 1977, and so I transitioned to learn to fly it, as well as the A-7 off the carrier. And because of that, I was given the opportunity to fly other aircraft, such as the E-2 Hawkeye, our C-2 Greyhound, C-1 Traitor, the A-6 Intruder, the A-6B, and all those airplanes. I did not get NATOPS qualified in them, but was given the opportunity to fly them once airborne off the ship. But the ship aircraft, the ones that I was qualified to launch and recover in aboard ship, were the A-7, the F-14, and then later on the FNA-18, both the A, B, C, D, E, and F. So those were my qualified aircraft, but the good fortune of being an LSO, landing signal officer, is I got to fly all the other aircraft off around the ship.
Well, I tell you, you're a lucky man. Not everybody that serves and flies gets to have that kind of alphabet soup in their ratings and in their aircraft flown. Now, also, you had mentioned before, obviously, you're a private pilot, and you fly your own aircraft. What do you fly?
Right now, I'm fortunate to be able to operate a 1941 Stearman, painted up in Navy colors, as you might well imagine. And I've had that since 1997. And I also have a 1930 Waco RNF that I purchased in 2000. That I keep in the stable. Both of them are fun flying aircraft. And matter of fact, I'll be taking the Stearman up to Galesburg, Illinois for the National Stearman Flying Convention about a week from now, and be joining actually Rod Hightower, who is a Stearman owner as well, the president of EAA out of Oshkosh. Prior to that, I owned the Stomp, as I said, but I also owned another 1946 Luscombe, the 1940 Luscombe, and a 1973 Citabria, all of which I flew, you know, pretty regularly. So I've owned and operated aircraft personally since 1979, when I bought that first Luscombe, and I've never been without an airplane since then.
Once you were bit by the bug, it was a lifelong affliction, huh?
Oh, yes, sir, Dave. Aviation got in my blood early. My grandfather, on my father's side, was a chemical engineer, but he served in the First World War as a fuels officer at an aviation base, Army Air Service in those days, and flew at Jennies, not as a pilot, but as an observer. And then my father was a waste gunner in B-26s out of England from D-Day all the way through the end of the war. My uncle, his brother, was a top turret gunner in B-17s, both of them in the 8th Air Force out of England that flew from, like I said, D-Day all the way through the end of the Second World War. And then my other uncle was a pipeline pilot flying little Cessnas and Pipers all across the western United States, checking pipelines for several oil companies. And so there's been aviation around me for years, and I got it into my blood as a kid, and I just never got it out of there. It's what I live and do. It's what I wake up every morning thinking about.
So it's not just in your blood. It sounds like myself, flying is in your genes.
It was in the genes, yes, sir. I don't know. You know, you always wonder how they got there, but somehow another, it sought its way into the gene pool, and it becomes your life. It's not just a hobby. It's not just a profession. It's truly your life's calling. That's why, you know, getting the opportunity, being given the opportunity to come down here to Sun and Fun, which I consider the pinnacle of aviation experiences, has just been a beyond a dream. It's it was sort of like a calling that I never knew I was headed towards.
Now, you retired from the Navy in 2000. And
yes,
after you retired, you went to work for Northrop?
Northrop Grumman gave me a position in Jacksonville, Florida, where I was allowed to go back to work to the base that I had closed, Naval Air Station Cecil Field. We closed it in 99. And one of my ideas while I was still on active duty was we, the Navy, the Hornet community, needed a place to have our airplanes modified with upgraded avionics, newer technology to meet battlefield requirements. And the Boeing corporate at the time, McDonnell Douglas, now Boeing, thought that'd be great at a base that we just closed at Cecil Field. So at the end of my tour, I helped sculpture this facility for modification, repair, and overhaul for Hornets, and I flew the first airplane in there on active duty to get a new miniature GPS system put in it. And after that, when I retired, the Northrop Company gave me a job offer to come down and run the Northrop half of that as in a teaming agreement with the Boeing company, because by law, the two aircraft companies have to work together on the Hornet. And so for the last 11 years, I ran the Northrop half of a Boeing Northrop Grumman cooperative partnership on upgrading the F-18. So that has been a wonderful experience because all my customers were my friends, the guys that I'd served in the service with, and several of the individuals that worked in the facility were retired military, Navy, petty officers and officers. And so it was sort of like staying in the Navy but without the uniform.
And going from career Navy into corporate America, working for Northrop Grumman, now you're on the nonprofit side of things, but this isn't your first foray into the nonprofit. What have you done in nonprofit before coming on board at Sun and Fun?
First of all, let's put a why I went into the nonprofit world. In 2001, my wonderful wife and partner for almost 30 years died of a brain aneurysm in the middle of the night and just didn't wake up on her 50th birthday. And after I got over the shock of that, I kind of took a deep breath and stepped back and realized how really precious life was and that maybe I wasn't giving enough back to it and I wasn't making my life as valuable to the rest of humanity as I should have been, because I'd been pretty focused on my Navy career all along. And when she died and I had a bit of an epiphany, I realized that there was more to life than just flying, that maybe I could do something for the next generation. So I immersed myself in several organizations that prior to that I would not have had a chance to because of my travels with the Navy. And I got involved with the Cancer Society and the American Heart Association through a mutual friend. And I was giving rides in my steerman to generate revenues for those fundraisers. And that then led me into an organization called the Daniel Foundation. And it was the oldest child caring organization in North Florida. It had been started in the Civil War for orphans. And I created a motorcycle ride for them. And that motorcycle fundraiser event went from nothing to the largest, most elaborate, and respected motorcycle event in North Florida, with over 1,000 riders generating over $185,000 in one day. And I did that for 5 years. And then that led me into being more involved in the Jacksonville Navy League, again, a nonprofit, as well as the Association of Naval Aviation. I took the chapter there from nothing to about 80-some participants and monthly meetings, creating monies for the ROTC group at the Jacksonville University. And then there was a myriad of other smaller events, Hands-On Jacksonville, and then I got into being on the board of directors as a chairman for the Florida State College of Jacksonville's aviation department. So you can see it one just spawned the other, and I got real involved with helping the community, you know, giving back. I love every bit of it. Took a lot of time, but every moment was well spent.
Well, now you mentioned Jacksonville. Was Jacksonville your home? You're going to relocate to Lakeland?
Yes, sir. You know, I was a gypsy kid for the first 20 years of my life, traveling around the southwest, if you will, or the Midwest, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Utah, and ultimately in Illinois for my high school years, because my father was a roughneck roustabout in the oil business. So we kind of we pulled up stakes when the rent came due, and moved all over the place, about 14 different places in 20 years. And after my flight training down in Kingsville, Texas, I was directed to Jacksonville to go to Naval Air Station Cecil Field. And we arrived there in September of 1975 and put down roots. And I have never left there other than to jump on an aircraft carrier and travel around for the last 36 years, and thought I was going to fully retire there. And we have a second home on a runway just south of the Jacksonville area. So our daughter was born there. I remarried there. Her family is there. So my extended family is there. So Jacksonville was truly our home and where we intended to remain the rest of our lives. And so when this opportunity presented itself, it was a family decision that everyone said, you got to. Of course, I wanted to, but I wanted their buy-in because it was going to be a life-changing evolution. We were going to relocate to Lakeland, and no one said, well, you might want to think about maybe going for a while and coming back. And they said, no, you need to go. Let them keep you there as long as they want. And my wife and I have been down here long enough to realize that whatever happens here, and hopefully it'll be a long and enjoyable relationship with the Sun and Fun organization, that we'll ultimately stay here. This is our new home, and this will be our permanent home. There's no intent to go back to Jacksonville. This is it. So we're thrilled to be here. And my wife is an avid Sun and Fun supporter. Believe it or not, she's the one that got me camping underneath the wing of my Stearman here about 8 or 9 years ago, and we've been doing it every year since.
Well, I hear people asking about Sun and Fun and, oh, what hotels should I take and stuff. I see it on the Facebook and the Twitter accounts, and I always tell people there's plenty of lodging around the Lakeland area, but if you want the full Sun and Fun experience, you need to stay on the grounds. And camping, it is, now that you've done both, you've stayed off-site and camped on-site, what do you think?
Oh, camping is the way to go. And to put it in perspective, my wife has already advised me that for the 2012 Sun and Fun International Flying and Air Expo, we are going to put our Stearman right in its normal parking spot in the leading edge of the antique and classics and vintage area, and we're going to put our tents up out there, and we will stay right there. So I will be on the field every day, every night, just like we normally do. So I highly recommend to anyone coming to Sun and Fun, please consider putting up a tent and enjoying the entire experience. There's so much that goes on in the evening, the camaraderie of the guests as well as the staff and the volunteers. It's an experience not to be missed. And you make such wonderful friends, people that I would normally not have had the chance to get to meet. I'll meet them after the show closes and the vendors go home, and we're out here on the field in the evenings at either the corn roast or maybe one of the seminars or a movie or just dinner. It's just fabulous, and I wouldn't miss that experience for anything, and I recommend it to anyone who really loves aviation.
And Sun and Fun, like aviation, Sun and Fun gets in your blood, and the people that you meet are as close to you as family. I've got friends from Sun and Fun that I see every year at Sun and Fun. I've seen them every year for 20, 30 years that I've been going, that live 5-10 miles away. I don't see them throughout the year, but I see them every day at Sun and Fun. So, and they become our family. It's a good family. It's a good feeling to be a part of it and belong. And of course, volunteering makes it your event. You know, so when you volunteer with Sun and Fun, when you help put it on, you get a new perspective as well. Now, let me ask you. You mentioned your wife, Nancy. Nancy was all for coming to Lakeland, huh? She's ready to go.
Well, okay, I'll give you a good example of how ready she was to go. We came down here on a Friday afternoon for the interview, and not thinking there was much or very good odds that we would be fortunate enough to be selected. We were actually going to go to a birthday party over in Tampa, to a friend's house that we used to stay at when I come down here. And so I thought, well, we'll just come down and do the interview and go to the birthday party, and that'd be pretty cool. Maybe I'll get VIP tickets for the air show next year. Well, they advised us that evening that we were the selected ones, and I say that, I say we, because even though I was interviewed, they were evaluating Nancy and her potential participation in the Sun and Fun event, because it really is a team effort, and there's so much to it. Well, they liked her. They liked me, obviously, and the next thing you know, we get the offer. Well, we get home on Sunday, brought the family in. As I said, we got their buy-in. I came home from work on Monday, and she's packing. And I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Okay, honey, I'm ready.
So I'm like, wait. She goes, we got to get going. We got to get down there. I'm like, are you sure? She goes, oh, I've never been so sure about anything in my life. So there you go. That was her attitude towards coming to Sun and Fun.
Great. Now, you mentioned got the family together. Tell me about your family.
Well, I have I've got a daughter from my late wife and I that is 30 years old. She went to the University of Arizona, and then she was up in Seattle for a while, and then moved back to Jacksonville to start another part of her life. So she decided to get into aviation. So she came back and is working at an FBO flight school, air charter. And she schedules charter flights and also manages the flight school schedule. And she's working on her private pilot license, very close to getting it. I think she should be done probably in September she should be complete. And she's also started up Women in Aviation chapter, Women in Aviation International, in Jacksonville, called the Fifis, the First Coast Fifis, after Walt Disney's Fifinellas, or the WASP insignia during the Second World War. And so she's got that going for her. And then my wife's two daughters, one is manages a Pier 1 store in St. Augustine, doing very well. She's 28 now, and just a wonderful lady with a great amount of success in her future. And the second, the youngest daughter of all of them, who's 26 now, she is a real estate sales lady for Richmond American. Her husband has his own real estate company. They're doing very well, and they are expecting our second grandchild in around the Christmas time frame. So we've got a regular family. Though it's a combined family, we're really happy with all of them, and they're doing great things, and they're thrilled about coming down to Sun and Fun as well. Actually, my daughter was going to volunteer down here last year, but she got this new job and couldn't get away from it. So that's pretty much wraps up our family. A great one as it is.
And your daughter's names?
My daughter is Stephanie, and my stepdaughters are, the oldest is Leandra, and the youngest is Stacy. So we've got Stephanie, Leandra, and Stacy in that order of age.
Well, that's great. It's not a great blended family.
Oh, yeah. And the grandbaby, of course, is Caden, which is the centerpiece of Nana's life, my wife, Nancy's. And now we're expecting a second one here in December, so it should be a lot of fun. But we're just, you know, we're only 3 hours south of Jacksonville, so it's easy for them to get down here or us to go up there. And we'll be flying back on weekends on occasion to go to our second home up there. And we plan on selling our current home that's up there, and when we buy after we've purchased a home here and moved everything into it.
Are you looking for an airport home there in Lakeland?
Well, you know, that has been discussed, and we are thinking about it. It will not be our first home. Our first home, the one that we're going to reside in here, is going to be hopefully either within the city limits or near to it. We've looked at homes down on Shepherd Road over in the Christina area, as well as the Eagle Brook area. And then we're looking at we're actually looking at a home right downtown Lakeland. And if you're familiar with the Dean House, which is a 1913 home, which is right downtown Lakeland, was built by the Dean family in 1913. And then it was a hospital for a while. And then it was Florida Southern College fraternity house from the 50s and 60s, and has been owned by another gentleman for the last 15 years, and a complete restoration has been done on the interior, and it's part of the exterior. It's at the corner of McDonald and Success. beautiful home.
Well, and being on the corner of success, it sounds like a good place for you to be.
And you know what's funny, Dave? It's kind of a white color, maybe a little bit of an off-white color, so it looks like a regal off-white White House for the president of Sun and Fun. What do you think? Great idea.
Hey, outstanding idea. Outstanding idea. All right. For Sun and Fun Radio, I'm Dave Shellbitter. If you want some more information about Sun and Fun, again, the website is sun-n-fun.org. You can find us on Twitter, at Sun and Fun Fly-In. You can find us on Facebook, Sun and Fun Fly-In on Facebook. If you want some more information about Sun and Fun Radio, you can follow at SNF Radio. You can follow my personal account at SNF Radio Dave. And hopefully there's going to be a Sun and Fun Radio Facebook page getting some exposure here real soon. So stay tuned to Sun and Fun Radio.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the FAA Production Studios, a joint effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and the FAA Safety Team. Please visit our studio website at faaproductionstudios.com to hear past programs.